Oh boy, you know you're in for a treat when you hear that tune, because it's time for another week of the Rec Poker Podcast. This is episode number 565, the chats edition. We also have a forums edition every week where we just talk strategy. Now, I'm your host, Jim Reed, Bluffsterini in the home game and at Rec Poker Jim on Twitter. And I have the best freaking job in the world talking poker with my friends here on the podcast every Monday night at 7:30 Eastern, live on YouTube. And you can join us every week for free and win a prize just for showing up. Now, we're going to be talking to the one and only Matt Affleck in just a moment. But first, I have to mention that we are brought to you by Running Aces, the official sponsor of the Rec Poker Podcast. Most of what we do here is free. We're a largely volunteer-based organization, so we depend on support from our sponsors and also from our premium members who take part in our training material and study opportunities for only $15 a month. That's a great deal. I got to say it, $15 a month. If you like hanging out with other enthusiastic poker players who are trying to get better together, this is the place for you. But if you don't have a penny to your name, don't worry. You can always sign up for free. Most of what we do here is free. And all it takes to become a member is an email address and a smile, although we do insist on both. Now, they let me host the show on Mondays, but I'm only one man. It takes a group, a gang, a village, a crew to make all the magic happen around here. We call this group of wizards the Wrecking Crew. And if you want to learn more about me or the rest of the Wrecking Crew, just go to rec.poker/crew. Or you can just listen up, because you're going to meet a few of them right here on the air, starting with producing co-host Chris Jones.
Well, I'm Chris Jones. You can find me 5b5 on Twitter or 5x5 in the Poker Stars home game. And I run our monthly deep dive strategy topic, where we take one topic and try to study it deeply as a community.
And I'm Joe Coolis. You can find me at Joe Cool PhD on Twitter, as well as on Blue Sky now. And you can find me as Elvita11 in the home game. I run the PsyOps monthly workshop, where we talk about psychological concepts and how they impact your poker game.
I'm John Somsky, also known as Poker Geek MN everywhere. And I run the Rec Poker home games, which are now known as the toughest play money home games in the multiverse.
I'm Kim Kilroy, 3056 in the home game, pat that 33 on social platforms, and I have a hand history review group that gets together once a month.
I'm Rob Washam. Find me as Rabman50 just about everywhere. And I, on the first and third Wednesdays of every month, we have a discussion on the latest books.
That's right. So as you can tell, we've got a lot going on over here at Rec Poker. And one of my favorite things to do is this podcast every Monday night. So, like I said, I'm so excited to be joined by Matt Affleck. Matt is a very successful professional player and coach. He's got over 3.5 million in live earnings, plus a ton of online success. He cut his teeth online when he was 20, and he's just been winning up a storm ever since then. Now he lives in Las Vegas. Plays a lot, coaches a lot. He's one of the great minds at PokerCoaching.com, which was one of our first learning partners here at Rec Poker. So even though it's taken us till episode 565, Matt, it is my pleasure to welcome you to the Rec Poker Podcast.
Thank you. I appreciate it. And I have to add, that was my first time hearing the intro song on 1x speed. So I listen to my podcast all on like 2x speed or 2.5x speed. So it's always very interesting when you hear intro songs come on. And in relation to the GPI Awards, it just came the Chip Race podcast. I don't like their podcasts. I love them, but they're Irish voices. I cannot understand them at all at 2x speed. So I have to listen to it at normal speed, and I don't like that. So.
Yes, yes. No, a lot of us are big podcast fans, as I'm sure you can guess. And we all have our speeds that we like to. I'm a 1.5 guy. You're a 2.0 guy. I think John Somsky is in the Chad McVean realm of like 2+. I don't know how those guys do it. But yeah, you're right. I get thrown by the intro, too. That's awesome. Well, it's delightful to hear that you even know what the Rec Poker Podcast is about. Let's just start right there. Are you still a fan of poker? You've been a professional in the world of poker for so long now. Talk to me a little bit about like what you love about poker still these days.
I mean, there's a skill in poker that's like one of the most underrated skills in poker, probably, is just like loving the game. And I have a lot of friends that play for a living that are really good players that hate poker. And they just do it because they're good at it, and it's a good way to make, you know, money in the game. and they're successful and all that, but they really just, they're like just kind of outgrinded it by this point of their life and they don't enjoy it. And I'm lucky, fortunate enough, like I still like love playing and I'm still like dedicating, you know, 50, 60 hours a week, 50 hours a week, whatever it is, to, like between playing, between coaching, studying, like I just still love it every day. You know, whether it's like, you know, I take like 2 days off and I'm like itching or whatever. If I go on a vacation and stuff, there's like, I haven't taken many like breaks. Like probably the longest break I've taken for poker is like a week and a half, 2 weeks. So in 20 years. So, I mean, I just love the game and still love it. Still learning a ton and stuff. And I think that's one of the, probably the most underrated like skills in poker, which I don't know you can really learn. It's just kind of a natural thing.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. That ability to sort of be motivated and to have that passion for it. If you're not, you know, naturally driven, then it's a chore, it's a grind, it's something that it's just, you know, you're never going to be able to succeed in life, you know, in a holistic sense the same way.
Poker or anything else, whatever you do. Like, you just have to love it.
Yeah. So we're going to take some questions from the YouTube chat here. We're going to take some questions from the Wrecking Crew panel. I just want to remind our YouTube chatters, every week at the end of the show, we give away a prize as part of our food bank raffle. So stick around to the end of the show. We're going to give away a prize to support the fight against food insecurity around the world. And also, we've officially made it, gang. We're so close to monetizing YouTube. They've let us they've let us offer you, the audience, the ability to donate through something called a super chat. And if anyone does a super chat today and donates anything to the Rec Poker community to help us defray our operational costs, we will share a portion of that with a local food bank as well. We love supporting food banks here at Rec Poker. So stick around to the YouTube chat. We're also going to be looking for some famous poker players' names so we can play Stake Study Stack with Matt near the end of the show. So get involved in the YouTube chat there and have some fun. So Matt, we're not going to talk a lot about sort of like your story getting into poker. I think a lot of people know that already. I want to talk to you really about studying poker, teaching poker, making the most of your time as a poker student. You have been a coach for a long time. I mentioned that you've done a lot of coaching with PokerCoaching.com. I know a lot of the Wrecking Crew members here are big fans of your work and look up to you. I guess, tell us just a little bit about sort of your journey as a coach, from starting to teach other players about this beautiful game, and kind of what you've learned along the way to become a better coach yourself over time.
Yeah, so I started coaching or creating content maybe like 6 years ago for Jonathan at PokerCoaching.com, just as like doing small little things. He asked me to write a chapter in his book, Selling Essential No Limit. I think one of he has so many books nowadays.
I know.
And that led into he offered me to coach on his site. And basically that's morphed into every week now, roughly pretty much every week for the last like 3 years. I do a live seminar, webinar, whatever you want to call it, on a topic of my choice or whatever the students want to see. And we do a coaching segment every week for about 60 to 75 minutes. And that was like the start of it. And so doing a lot of work with that. And then during pandemic is kind of where private coaching really boomed. And that was, you know, you have a lot of live poker players that haven't played online in years. Since like before Black Friday coming online, and the private coaching market kind of blew up. So I started taking on private students for the first time in coaching and really transitioning, helping like live poker players transition to online poker and dealing about that. And yeah, coaching is a completely different skill set. It's something I am still working on all the time to this day, of improving coaching, just like improving poker. It's its own kind of separate skill set, and it's not something I've mastered. It's not something I'll ever master. It's just kind of, I'm continually working to improve in that. So,
well, and I know the YouTube is blowing up with people with questions. I guess my question to you to start that off is, so what are some qualities of a good coach? Because like you say, the skill set's different, it's not just playing. And so like, what makes for a good coach?
So broadly speaking, I would say a good coach is someone that is able to take complicated topics and very simplify them down to very simple rules and implementable rules. So you really want to just be able to take away things that you can implement in game that are easy to implement, that are easy to identify, and those types of rules that are just, once you get repetitions out of them, it's just going to be like, you know, quick fire. You're going to recognize situations very quickly. So breaking things down into those simple what to look for and identifying complex topics to the simple thing. And like the nuances don't really matter. It's like the broad picture 90% rule, you know, where 90% mm-hmm. of the outcome comes from whatever, 20% of the work. I think that's it. The rule.
Yep.
something like that. Whatever. You guys know what I get. So working with that. Another, I think, quality and something I'm working on as a coach, and I've really started to develop over the last, you know, 6 months or something, is a coach that's both receptive to, like, yes, the student's paying for the time and we can do what they want to do, but I'm also fairly aggressive and being like, this doesn't matter. I don't care what you do here. The issue is, in this hand, they give me some complex river spot. I don't care about what you do here. It's like, you really screwed up the flop here. And the flop is what matters, because the flop is very high frequency spot. So I focus on coaching super high frequency spots that aren't maybe as worth as much money, but they come up a lot and they're worth way more than some complicated river check raise. Should I call here? I'm like, I don't know. It's like, is the player bluffing or not? Yes or no. Like it comes down to like certain things there, but there's, you know, some essential spots in No Limit Hold'em that are very, very high frequency that come up a lot that you just need to know the framework and know how those spots work. And that's kind of what I focus on as a coach.
I love that. I kind of think of that as just sort of being like fluent in the language of poker. You kind of learn to understand the rhythm and flow of the game. And, you know, this action tends to speak to a certain hand range or hand strength or something like that. And you don't need to pin down exactly what it is, but, you know, the back of your brain is kind of telling you how to interpret it, because it happens so often. I mean, you do kind of get a sense for that. I love that idea. Chris, you've got some comments from the YouTube chat, I think.
Matt, a lot of people weighing in. Dean saying Affleck does awesome webinars. Stu Unger Garments, I don't know who that, says that Affleck loves the Socratic method of teaching. He asks a lot of questions and makes us answer them. So there's some big, big fans in the chat, but there are a couple of questions that came up, which I kind of speak to maybe your coaching style. Harold Fowler says, when I first started watching Matt a few years ago, he was very solver based in his play, including some RNGing in terms of like making decisions. But now when people ask him about any adjustments, he would say, I just play my strategy. But I think he plays much more exploitively now. And he's asking, can I confirm this? Tell about the shift. So would you agree with that? Would you agree that you were sort of maybe when you began your coaching sort of journey and maybe just your play 6-7 years ago that you were sort of more kind of very theory grounded and you're now much more exploitive in your approach? Would you agree with that assessment? And if so, what brought that shift along?
Okay. So I'm 100% theory in my coaching and my play, which also means I'm 100% exploit. So like I have this like pet peeve. So people like, you see this all over the internet, like, oh, should you play exploit? Should you play theory? And like, this is all coming to like this Landon versus JBeck stuff going on and stuff right now. So here's my theory. So like, if you look at just like what game theory is, it doesn't have anything to do with poker. So like, I'm not an expert in all that, but like, you know, Prisoner's Dilemma, like we probably all remember that in school studying the Prisoner's Dilemma. And all the game theory is like, you want to maximize your game. Right. And what you see in a solver output is a Nash equilibrium. So what a Nash equilibrium is like you're playing against yourself. And basically the two strategies are competing until neither player can do that. So the Nash equilibrium strategy is also the theory, game theory, optimal strategy. But in a game theory setting, you still always want to do whatever you can to exploit, like to maximize your input. So if your person on the other side is making this mistake and you know you could do something else to make more money, you're going to do that. And that is the optimal thing to do. So everyone, in my opinion, like I'm going to get whatever internet pushback on it, everyone is trying to play exploit. You know, Ike Haxton and all the super high roller guys, they're still trying to win the absolute maximum, right? They're going to do whatever they can do to win the maximum, and that is the GTO answer. Now, if they're like those players are making so little mistakes that the maximum tends to be very, very close to a Nash equilibrium strategy. And so everyone is trying to, you should always try to play 100% exploit But that entail is going to be like a solver, knowing what a solver output is versus an exploit output is kind of what I'm getting at there. I'm explaining that well, hopefully.
No, I mean, I think that makes perfect sense, because I think I think it's almost it's a false dichotomy between whether you play exploit or GTO. Like that's sort of like there's never two computers playing each themselves, right? So like that just makes a lot of sense.
So how I coach is I coach in baselines. So I'm going to teach you baseline strategies of what you should be doing. And then it becomes, once you learn the baselines, it becomes really easy to know what the adjustments are. Like, it becomes very, very, very easy. Well, it's like, this guy's too tight. Okay, I'm going to value bet a little bit less tight. So therefore, I'm going to bluff less and I'm going to check more. Well, this player is calling too loose. Okay, I'm going to bluff a little less and value bet a little bit thinner. Like, once you learn baselines, and then it becomes pretty easy. The problem is most people don't know what any baselines are. So they don't know where to make the adjustments or where not to make the adjustments. So that's how I coach in terms of baselines. And then... In my opinion, once you learn the baselines and do a lot of reps, it becomes much easier to know, like, the exploits kind of become obvious of, like, where the fringe spots are and how to adjust on those fringe spots.
And this is a kind of a total different departure looking at this question, but we have WPT Niners writes in, and this might be hard to answer, honestly, if you don't know this person, but I'm going to ask it to you anyway, and you can answer it any way you want.
Go for it.
They write in and say, I've got 10K bankroll to risk at the WSOP. How do I decide what tournaments I should take my shots in?
First, it depends. I'm assuming this is playing recreationally, like play where you're going to have fun playing if you're playing recreationally, sure. But like, obviously, there's like some 500. Like, we probably want to spread that out into like the most tournaments possible. So like some 300s and 500s at the World Series, because they like to lower the average buy-in every year. So playing those events, looking off property, like each casino kind of has their own niche. And so there's casinos like, I think, like the Orleans and Golden Nugget and stuff. They're going to have a lot of tournaments every day with like a $300 buy-in and stuff with pretty big guarantees and stuff. So I would be looking at like other properties with big guarantees. I kind of have this theory during the summer that the best tournament to play is probably the second best tournament. Cause like the best players are all going to go play whatever the best tournament is. Now, when there's like a 1K at the World Series, like that's different. But like, I'm talking like, say there's a 3K at the World Series and like a $600, 500K somewhere else. It's probably the $600, 500K that's going to be like the better tournament per se. So sometimes finding like the second best tournament that no one's talking about is normally maybe the better move.
And I think there's always this tension between, you know, wanting to go down there and win a bracelet. You want to be competing in these bracelet events, these prestige events. But, you know, those are where all the best players are playing. Or, I mean, you know, a lot of the best players are playing. You've had a lot of experience. I mean, you live in Vegas. I know you've played in the series a ton. You've had some phenomenal finishes. When the series comes to town, how do you choose how to spend your bankroll? Or how do you tournament select when a big series like that comes to town? Where do you spend your time and money?
Majority is at the World Series. Majority is like, I don't play like super high stakes. Well, it depends what you consider like high stakes, mid stakes. Like, I'm playing pretty much everything 5K and under, 3K and under. But like, if there's a 5K at the World Series and a 1K somewhere else, I'm probably playing the 1K. And so a lot at the World Series, just because, like you said, like people want to play in those World Series events. To be completely honest, I don't give a shit about bracelets as a no limit player. It's kind of like, in my opinion, it's kind of a stupid thing to think about, because like over like 20 years, I might not even be a favorite to win one, because the average field size I'm playing is 1500 to 2000 players. It's very, very difficult to win one of those, and you just can't put in enough volume. So like, I'm just playing whatever makes me the most money. So like, and then I get the pushback, like, yes, I don't have a bracelet, so I don't know the feeling of having a bracelet. So that's why I said like deflect that. But yeah, it's like, I don't care if it's, you know, and I also, you know, there's debates out there, like certain rooms are run better than others. So I'm going to play, you know, where I feel comfortable. Like, do I want to set, especially if you're recreational, like if you enjoy playing somewhere else, even if it involves you making a little bit less money, because maybe it's a tougher tournament, but it's going to be you happier and you're only there for a week, play whatever makes you happy, you know? For me, I'm there to make the most money, so I'm going to play whatever I deem to be the highest value tournaments, but also considering, like, opportunity costs and that type of stuff. So,
Yeah, it's a real, we're actually putting a blog article out sometimes very soon, just about that kind of dichotomy between the pro experience and the recreational experience during a big series like the WSOP, because I think, you know, we all recreational players, we want to go down there and we want to make money, but we're really there for the experience and sort of to have that bucket list item. And I know once you go pro and you know, you've spent enough time working in the industry, that it's just less alluring, and maximizing your ROI is just a better business decision. So I think the incentives are different, and so the experience is different. That makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
Was there like a moment in time where you feel like you switched from one to the other? You know what I mean? Like, can you go back and think about that day when you decided, you know what, I'm just going to go make all the freaking money I can. Who cares about this other stuff?
I don't know if there was an exact moment in time or anything like that. But more so just like, yeah, it's like, that's just kind of been my motivation, is to make money and enjoy it. And, you know, there's some rooms with more comfortable chair and a little bit more like comfort and all that stuff. But it's more so just the realization and understanding variance in tournaments. And as that realization came in of like, winning, like the realization that like a bracelets don't define like skill level in poker.
Right.
And
right.
So therefore it's like, why is that something that I need to like achieve from a mental ability to like validate myself in the terms of that. And so like, I've just kind of drawn comfort in where I am and in understanding my game. And therefore like, I still play a lot of World Series events, but I play them because they're like the highest value in terms of playing. And yeah, winning bracelets, just like playing a 2,000 person tournament, it's just the realization that like, my goal isn't there to win the tournament, because that's just going to lead to disappointment all the time. Most of the time, my goal is going to be to make the most money. And then whether that's, you know, I bust out in 4 hours or I bust on day three or whatever, it's just like, I've gone there, I've made my money, and move on to the next one.
Yeah, just all you can do is make one good decision after another, right? And,
exactly.
And the results are going to be what they are going to be. All we can focus 100%. On is what we can control. Chris, you had a couple more YouTube chatters. A
couple more from the YouTube chat, and I think these are really interesting ones. So, Matt, you're kind of known, I think, both in your coaching and your poker coaching content and your play, really, is as an MTT specialist. You're also really, I mean, I've just valued so much of your content about post-flop play. I think you do a really great job sort of explaining street by street approaches, and like you were talking about, those sort of high impact moments that you really have to get right as a player. But this question's sort of interesting. It's kind of related. There's two questions that are related. Stu Unger Garments wonders, do you stick exclusively with tournaments, or do you play cash at all? I would imagine you have a significant edge at cash, considering your deep knowledge of post-flop play. So do you play cash at all?
Yeah, I still play a decent amount of like live cash and stuff here in Vegas. And I do it to mix it up. Like, I'll play online like 3 or 4 days a week, and then maybe play live cash 1 or 2 nights a week to mix it up. And yeah, I would say 98% of my studying, 95% of my studying is all tournaments, but it's all no limit hold'em study. And I think I get this, and like people might like attend my webinars and stuff, and I'll get someone that's like kind of like a new person that comes to the webinar, and they go, does this apply to cash games as well? And I kind of go on this rant of like, the concepts of no limit hold'em apply to cash games and tournaments. Like, the concepts are like, no limit hold'em is still the game. What changes is the ranges and stacked up, and like your strategy changed slightly different on the stacked up, and the ranges are different. So it's like, all the like, I learn a lot from some really good cash game like content to apply to my tournament game. And I also learn a lot of like apply a lot of like tournament concepts to cash games still. Mm-hmm. And it's just more so the difference of stack depth, really. That's really all that changes. But I think a lot of tournament players would benefit a lot from learning some cash game concepts, where polarization becomes a lot more important. Because that's where tournament players tend to really struggle, is in the department of like polarization. Mm-hmm. And it's really helped, like playing cash really helps my early game, like tournament stuff as well.
Yeah. Well, speaking of that, that kind of goes right to the follow-up question that the Life Shoe Aquatic brought up, saying, following up, saying, you know, there's all this advice, I think, and if we read books like Daro Carney's ICM book, that you get sort of the max expected value out of max late regging a tournament. But somebody like you, who has such a potentially studied advantage over your opponent, especially in those early levels when they can make more mistakes and maybe they're not as accustomed to, like, so what is your approach to when you register a tournament, and where do you think you find your edge sort of balancing that, those kind of dynamics?
Oh, you're going to get me on a rant. You're catching on my
rant. Let's go.
I think a lot of pros are losing out on a lot of money with this whole concept of max late regging being the highest EV strategy. It is true that if you max late reg, your stack will be worth slightly more than if you register on time. That's been a proven fact, and that's undeniable. I agree. But what people don't consider is there's an opportunity cost. And the opportunity cost is something. So therefore, like, let's say max late reg ends, like, so a typical, like, win tournament here in Vegas, max late reg ends at dinner at 7:30. That's when you can enter, and the tournament starts at noon. If, let's say it's a, you know, $100 buy-in or whatever, $100 buy-in, not worth my time for 7 hours. But let's say I'm going to go play cash. So then I can make the justification, well, I'll play cash from noon to seven and then max late reg. That's like using that time. That's an opportunity cost. But a lot of pros, they're not playing poker. Like, let's say it's like a 1500 no limit. Now, maybe that's not worth someone's time that, you know, plays like high rollers and has a $10,000 average buy-in. But like, to use that as a, like, I think it's like a lazy crux that they're going to like max late reg this tournament. But unless you're like using that time to make money otherwise, it's really, you're given, the opportunity cost is massive. And if that's like, I'm not talking about, oh, you show up an hour late because you want to finish your warm up and go to the gym or whatever, get lunch, something like that. But if you're just going to be like sitting on your couch or sleeping in bed or doing whatever, like, that's just laziness. And that's not like using, like, that's, you're giving up an opportunity cost, in my opinion. You can make the arguments of like hourly rate and that type of stuff, but the opportunity cost is massive. And I think players are ignoring that a lot.
Opportunity cost is going to come up again in this interview. It's a concept we talk about a lot here on the show. But first, I want to hear from our resident clinical. Wait, I'm going to screw it up, Joseph. Please introduce yourself with all the impressive credentials so I don't have to do it, because I always screw it up.
Biggest moron on the screen? Is that
right here? Right here.
So, Matt, just so you know what he's talking about, I'm a clinical neuropsychologist. And so I'm always looking in terms of applying psychological concepts in terms of poker game. And that's not actually what, I mean, my question is more along the lines of teaching, because you were bringing up a lot of good points considering max late regging and opportunity costs and a lot of different things that go on. And there's a huge chasm, I think, in between what a recreational poker player is looking for in terms of poker versus what a pro is. And that's actually one of the limitations I see in a lot of teaching videos and so on, is they're not separating those two things out, because a pro poker player is going to maximize every single dollar that they're going against every single buy-in that they have, versus the recreational poker player who's like, I sit at a table and I shuffle chips and that's great. And then I get to play and I get excited and all these different things.
Sure.
So my question is, how, when you're teaching your students, do you divide that up? And is there a difference in terms of what you're trying to teach a rec player for versus a player who's looking to make this their profession? Does that make sense what the question is?
Yeah. I would say, though, like, probably 80 to 90% of my coaching is based off of, like, I would say, like, serious recreationals or, like, people that are considering poker, at least for, like, a very serious hobby, or at the least, like, they're trying to make, like, a side income at it. And so they're actively trying to be winning players. And I don't have many students that are just, like, coming in at a very, 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 very basic, like, level. And a lot of times, those types of students that approach me for coaching, I'll normally refer them more so to, like, a tournament masterclass on pokercoaching.com or some type of, like, general poker course like that first to understand the fundamentals is just way more efficient at that point, because you're paying like a lower rate and it's going to cover a lot more hours of like the basic fundamentals. And so, you know, whether it's professionals trying to improve or like very serious recs, like I kind of treat it a little bit of the same, but I'll have like, you know, recs that are really trying to be serious, but they're like, also like they're very openly like, I want to play a little bit looser. I'm like, okay, that's fine. As long as you're like aware of what you're doing, we can show you how to do it and where you should do it. Like, that's fine. But more so again, like teaching baselines, knowing what's close. And then like, you want to like play a little bit more looser. You don't want to like fold, like know what's close on the other end and then like add those hands in, and you can probably turn those hands profitable based off of mistakes that other players are making.
So just a quick follow-up in terms of your coaching, because it was something that was said in the chat that says you rely on a more Socratic method of coaching your students, asking a lot of different questions. And that's actually a style that I use with my students in my field that I work with. And I find it's not for everybody. And in fact, many will shy away pretty actively from that. The egos come into play when Socratic questions, people are put in tough positions. Do you have a process where you choose particular students over others? Is there a way that you manage those egos as you're interacting with your students?
So in general, like how I coach in general is I don't really care what you did in the hand. I care about like the thought process that's going on, because I can correct the thought process. And so like the end goal is like, I want you to be able to make decisions with like a very logical process. I'm like, all right, that makes sense. Like you do something, I might not agree that you whatever raised or bet here, but you're like, I bet here for this, and this reason. I'm like, okay, that makes sense. Sure. But like I bet here for this, and this reason. If I can come up with no, and no, and give you the counterpoints of why those reasons are bad, that's how you learn. Now I can say like, now I can correct the thought process, and now you're going to be able to make better decisions. So like, that's like one crux of my coaching of like how I tend to do it. The other thing is, and how I coach a bit differently is, and this might be a little off topic, like I don't coach real hand history reviews. I think hand history reviews are, I don't know, like kind of lazy, and they're not that effective in terms of studying. So how I coach is like, for example, I had a lesson with a student this morning. We only worked on c-betting out of position. The student, I noticed they're doing a database reviews, they're c-betting too much out of position. We looked through, like, we did a little bit of like a little PowerPoint for like 15 minutes talking about the general. We went through like 10 or 15 examples, and then we drilled just c-betting out of position. And we did that like 30 times. That student got way better at c-betting out of position. And by the end of it, they were doing it because they saw the same thing 30 times in a row. There's not a single person that's not going to get better. The problem when you do a hand history review is, one hand is c-betting out of position. One hand is c-betting in position. One hand is three-bet pot. One hand's whatever, like river check raise. They're all different. You're not going to like learn because you're not seeing the same process over and over and over again. So like I kind of like my philosophy is that like each session should be one thing, maybe two, if it's like a quick, easy type of fix. And we look at that spot over and over and over again in different iterations of it, focusing on the framework, focusing on the thought process of it. And then like, I'm going to give you drills or homework on how to prove it. You're going to do some more. And then like, it's like, that's how I coach in terms of getting better. And like, in general, like with hand history reviews, like students tend to send like hands that aren't really like high frequency spots. So like, I'll never get a student that sends a hand that like, they folded the flop. You're like, should I call here? Like, they just don't think about it because they don't know, like most students just don't know what's a mistake. And so in this way, like, of coaching, it's we hit these high frequency spots over and over again. That's like how I go about correcting, improving students' play.
Great answer. I love teasing that out. Joe, did you have a follow up?
I was just going to say, I think that's a great way to think about it. It's kind of like the player wants to learn how to play guitar and they listen to songs and they can strum along a little bit, but they never really actually improve substantially because they don't learn how to do the scales or the chords and, you know, and learn everything that goes into it by drilling down into those individual spots. But they learn a few songs and they can probably have fun doing that. So I think that's a great way to look at it.
Yeah, we've talked about it before, like the study of a language where you can kind of learn a phrase book, which will just give you the ability to make yourself known and to kind of get through the day. But if you really want to understand how to speak a language, you have to become fluent in it. You have to understand the why of it. And I think poker is just exactly like that. You can learn some heuristics and general rules from hand histories, but unless you know like why you're doing it, what you're trying to manipulate your opponent into doing, that kind of stuff, then you're really just flipping to the index page every time. It's not something that you really get to bring home yourself.
Yeah, to touch on that, like my favorite coach in the world and person who I get coached, like Jordan Drummond, who's BBZ, to kill on that, he's used this analogy and I love it, and I use it with my students now. Solvers are like, everyone used to have a math textbook, right, in school. In the back of the book is all the answers. The solver is the answers at the back of the book. That's what he explained. Okay. If you study the answers at the back of the book, like all these people trying to copy and memorize solves, you're not going to learn. You might do better on that one board or that one thing. The point is you need to learn the process, the proper framework. And normally that framework doesn't have to be that complicated. But when you look at a solver and look at a screen, it looks really, really, really complicated. And that's where coaching comes in. It's like breaking that framework down into like an easier 3, 4, 5 step process that's repeatable and easily implementable in game. And that leads you to getting very close to what that answer is at the back of the book. It's never going to be perfect, but it's going to get you to very close to the answer at the back of the book. And that's like an analogy that he's used that like is really like the best way I've heard to explain why like solvers, I think, are the most important way to study.
And you mentioned right at the top of the show, sort of the sense of, oh my God, I totally lost what I was going to say there. Kim, you had something to jump in next, and then I'll see if I can collect my thoughts.
All right. I really, really like your methods of teaching high frequency spots. I think that's really the way to go. But I had another question regarding your coaching, and that is, how many, or do you have women that are students? And if so, what percentage would you say make up the female percentage, number of your students?
Right now, in terms of regular coaching students, I have I would say two for sure that have regularly got lessons over the last past while, and maybe maybe one or two off and on. But I'd say 10-15%. Like most of my students, just like most of poker players, are male. But I definitely have two that have very regularly gotten like sessions from me throughout. And so yeah, it's a small percentage. Hopefully, as you know, women in poker, it's getting better in terms of more women entering poker and stuff. But yeah, in terms of like the coaching side, I haven't seen as much of the as women in poker the last year or two have increased. I haven't seen that as much in coaching.
I know there's a lot of women that are keen to get coaching in poker. And I'm just wondering if you think there's anything that the male coaches could do to reach out to attract more women to their specific coaching sites or coaching styles.
It's a good question. I don't know if I have I'm trying to think of the answer.
It's not an easy answer.
I approach coaching kind of how I approach playing poker, where like I study my strategies, like playing poker. I study my strategies and I play my strategies and I'm making adjustments while I play, but I trust my strategies and I play. And the analogy I like to use is like, I'm a big sports fan. If you're an NFL team and you're the best throwing team in the NFL, if you make it to the Super Bowl, you're not going to start running the ball all game. You're going to keep throwing the ball. And like, I play my strategies and like play those games. In terms of coaching, I found a way of coaching that works for me and works for my students. And I realize that's not the best form of coaching for everyone, but it's like, what is effective? And so in terms of coaching, it's very like, my style of coaching is not going to be perfect for everyone. Another coach's style might be better for some other people than me. And that's 100% okay with me. Like that's fine. It's about like finding the coach that resonates with your style. And some people don't like that. I'll just straight up tell the student, like, I'm like, no, you're wrong. Like, I need you to trust me. Like here, and like some things I'm like very give and take. Like, yeah, I think you're like, that's a fine explanation of why you did this. I think that's fine. I might not agree with it, but like, I think that seems reasonable. But like, I will push back on students and be like, no, and it's like, no. And some people don't like that, but that's like how I coach in terms of the way of like, I'm not like a straight yes or no, but I'm like, the process that you're getting that answer, I'm going to say is like, it's not repeatable in a way. Like, and I'll be like, if you want to improve, you have to change that kind of process, otherwise it's just gonna break down in high pressure situations.
You sound like me when I'm talking poker.
That's true. But there are some wrong answers out there, right? And like people need to know because not everything. I mean, poker has a lot of different ways to reach equilibrium. And you can have right answers depending on the assumptions for a lot of these circumstances. But sometimes things are just wrong. Like sometimes it's just wrong.
So let me rephrase that. The answer, like I said before, I normally don't care what your answer is. I care the process of how you got to the answer because I want your process to be repeatable. And what ends up happening is your process is very easy on day one of a tournament. What really happens in like the Joe in psychology is probably can like hopefully attest this. When you get down to the final two tables or the final table and pressure starts to build, part of the brain, when emotions get very high, part of your decision making in your brain starts to shut down. And you need to have these very, very simple, logical thought processes and frameworks to build upon. Because now when your opponent like shoves the river, you get into a really tough spot. I'll call the clock pretty quick because you can easily tell when someone is just sitting there saying, this spot sucks. And they're not actually thinking about making a decision. They're just sitting there saying, this sucks. I don't know what to do. I'm like, great. It's going to suck in 30 seconds too. But like, you need to have like these frameworks to fall back on to make a decision. And like in high pressure situations, that's where these frameworks really, really matter. And that's where you can really tell when your frameworks are good is when they don't break down during those really, really high pressure spots. So like I would say for everyone, think that next time you get to like a really deep high pressure spot, and it doesn't have to be like a final table or something, like you get to a really difficult spot and you're just sitting there saying, this sucks. I'm like, that's not productive. Like you need to have something like a framework to how you make your decisions.
So just to speak to the psychology there, since you called me out, you know, that you're exactly right, is that what happens is once you reach too high levels of anxiety, you can't actually access a variety of thought processes to analyze things. And so then you end up relying on overlearned behaviors. So I think that what you're trying to do is to drill into the overlearned behaviors such that you don't actually have to think your way through it. It becomes an automatic process.
Yeah. And the analogy I use, it's like when you get into a fight with your significant other, emotions get high and someone says something they didn't really mean. They said, I hate you or whatever it is. And then like after the fight, you're like, I obviously didn't mean that. But it's like when emotions get high, like the decision part of your brain just shuts down. So that's kind of the analogy I like to use there.
I love that. And the part of the problem is that we are in high pressure situations. We're in a timed environment where we don't, you know, the stakes matter, especially for recreational players. We might not be in a spot like this again, you know, for a long time. So, you know, how you perform in those kind of stressful situations does matter. Yep. Kim, did you have a follow-up before we move on?
Yeah, I did. I didn't mean to put you on the spot about coaching women and stuff.
Oh, no.
But,
no.
Jim asked me if I had a suggestion as an answer for you. And I don't really have a suggestion specifically, but I said that it's just something I think you and all male coaches should think about, because women are entering the poker world at a huge rate and we're looking for coaches. We're looking for good coaches. And because most of the accomplished poker players today that are coaching are men, we want to be able to feel comfortable and to feel something that they have something sort of special to teach women, or that they can teach women. And I don't have an answer as to how you do that. I just think it's something as a coach that might be a good thing to look at.
Okay.
Good. Joe?
Well, my question is actually kind of along the same lines, and it's my poker study friends make fun of me for it. But when you have a Socratic method in terms of interacting with students, particularly those with large egos, they don't actually always take it very well. And so my question is for you is, how many times have you had your students cry as a result of the questioning that you're doing?
Zero. Zero, luckily. I'm not, but I will push for like, why? I ask why a lot. And it's like, I'll consistently like push, even though I know exactly what their why is, I'll like keep pushing until they actually say why. And so, I try to use like simpler logical reason. And like, I don't know, this might be off, but like one of the simple questions like is in terms of like bet sizing. And they're like, I'm like, well, they're like, oh, like they have a strong hand. They're like, oh, I'll bet half pot or three pot. I'm like, I'll probably bet 2x pot here. I'll overbet. They're like, why? What are they going to call with? They won't call with anything. And I go, okay, well, why aren't you bluffing 100% of the time to the overbet? And they'll be like, you look through, I'm like, well, you had 7-eye there. Why didn't you overbet? Because earlier you said that they're not going to call with anything. So why wouldn't you overbet there? And then it kind of gets the light bulb clicking of like, all right. Like my point was, is that logic doesn't make sense. And it's a very easy counterable argument that you don't actually believe that because you're not doing the opposite side of it. And so that's kind of like an example of a pushback or like an asking why and like fishing out the answers that I want them to understand is how I would go about it.
I love that. Yeah. And I don't think we look enough at those spots where it's like, oh, well, someone always has it when they take that line. It's like, okay, then why aren't we bluffing on that line like all the time, right? Just reverse engineer some bluffs into that spot. Like, anyway, okay. Yeah, don't get me started.
I agree.
Don't get me started. Chris, we got a few more comments from the YouTube chat, and then we're going to have to wrap this up pretty soon. Matt, I'm going to beg you to come back on the show sometime over the next little while because people want more Matt Affleck on the Rec Poker Podcast.
Sure. Yeah, I'd be happy to do it. Pretty much any time, really.
All right. Chris, what's going on in the YouTube chat?
I mean, I'm going to try to whittle some of these down because we've got so many good comments and questions, but I'm going to blend one of these asking about solver study. And there's a couple of questions about solvers here, especially as they're becoming sort of more available. You have tools out there that are, you know, GTO Wizard, all these tools out there, which sort of more accessible to more players.
Yeah.
And some of the questions are asking about, do you think that this is sort of starting to produce any bad habits with people who maybe don't understand the why behind the solvers, things that you're seeing with your students or in play? Do you think that this is starting to produce any bad habits?
Yeah. I mean, what comes to mind there is just the analogy from before, which again, it wasn't my analogy. I was taught this by Jordan, and it's that the solver is the answers to the back of the math book, and you're not going to get better at math if you just look at those answers.
Yeah.
All right. And there's, I'm awful. Like everyone's bad. Like no one's good enough to be able to memorize the boards. And I might be talking like out of my ass here, but even the highest of whoever you think the best player in the world is, that is the most GTO player, whatever, I'm going to guess you, they're not trying to copy a strategy. What they're doing is they're taking all these little nuanced little bits that they've seen repeated over and over and over the thousands of solves. And they're like, I'm pretty sure this is applying here and I'm going to do this because of this. I know like betting by suits or betting by, you know, like this high card versus this high card. They're taking repeatable patterns that are easily implementable. And they're not remembering, like it takes the highest skilled player to know the nuance between like a queen 7-5 and a queen 7-6 or what that, but you're taking these concepts that are very broad and easily repeatable. That's how you want to like study and learn, and learning those like implementable patterns is an easy one is like playing the turn, like you bet the flop, they call and it's on you in position. They check the turn. Like you're betting, going to bet in a polarized way. You don't want to bet your middling strength hands. You want to bet your really good hands and your bluffs. And you're going to bet for a very large sizing, often a geometric bet sizing. Like it's a very, 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 very consistent strategy that's going to apply to 95% of situations. Like things like that start to make poker. It's not an easy game, but it very much like starts to simplify the game down a lot.
And then I'm going to jump in and kind of just adjust one of these questions just for my own curiosity, because I'm curious about your answer to this. So one of the things that I often hear from our audience, from recreational sort of players who play in very heavy recreational fields, is that, you know, I could study all this stuff, but it's nonsense because I play with people. It's like four limps and then there's a raise and then five calls and I go six ways to a flop and there's no solver on earth that's going to tell me how to approach that spot. What would you say to somebody like that who's in those kinds of situations about how study could help them, how coaching could help them in those kinds of games, in those games? So, and we all recognize those kinds of games where it's just, you know, it's call happy. It's everyone wants to see the flop. It's lots of limping. You know, what would you say to that player?
Sure. So there's like concepts still that are going to apply there. Like obviously there's no solver that's going to know how to play 8-way limped 2-5 no limit pots. Like agreed 100%. But there are concepts there. Like if you have 8 limps, if you're going to go multi-way to the pot, you want hands that can make the nuts. You don't want to play king 10 offsuit. You don't want to play 10 8 off. You want to play, you don't want to play even a hand like 6-5 suited necessarily there, because that's a hand that when you make a flush and a lot of money starts going in, it's probably pretty damn likely that one of those other seven players has a better flush draw than you. So situations like that, like it's a, again, a, like a repeatable process. The more players are in the pot, the more you need hands that play nuttiness, you know, in a way. You know, concepts of like, you know, just you're going to have like a raising range, you pile in a lot of money with really, really good hands. Maybe your player is a calling station and you can value bet way thinner than a solver would because they're calling way too much, you know. And then you just, maybe you don't bluff ever. You just, because they're just calling way too wide. So the reason you bluff is to get value from your value hands. Well, if you don't need to incentivize them to call by bluffing, then don't bluff and just value bet. So there's still like concepts that, can apply there, and there are spots you still want to bluff, but it's very specific. Like you want to bluff when they have a lot of auto folds in those types of spots. You don't want to try to bluff them off like top pair when their range is really narrow, because they might not have a 0% folding range on the river with when you've bet flop, bet turn, they only have top pair. But like they might have a huge folding range on the river when like everything misses and they have a ton of like busted flush draws and you have 10 high and you just bet, you know, pretty small to get them to fold all their air, and you just don't care when they call you with middle pair because that's not what you're targeting there.
Yeah, targeting, such an important concept. I love that answer. I've got a question from Evil Roy Slade here in the YouTube chat, saying about 10 years ago, he played 2,500 at the WSOP and had at least five well-known pros at various tables over a couple days, including yourself, Matt. So We kind of talk a lot about playing the micro WSOP buy-ins, the 400s, the 800s, the 1000s. And sometimes you get a satellite into the big ones, the 10,000 main event, stuff like that. Sure. Are the 3000 to 5000, are those the toughest fields because the recreational players aren't buying in directly and they're also not satelliting in? Is there like a ranking of the different buy-in fields for these?
Yeah, I mean, yes and no. Like, obviously, as the buy-in goes up, the field will get slightly tougher. But I almost, in a way, feel like it just becomes more polarizing. Like, if you, for example, like, so I don't play them, so I'm kind of talking without experience here. But in like the super high roller scene right now, it's like a very polarizing thing where there's not that many bad players, but like you don't need very many bad players when the field is that big of a buy-in to make everyone like very, very profitable. But sometimes at the higher buy-ins, you just get a different type of rec that's going to play. And those are normally like maybe someone that's going to like gamble a lot more. But in and you're going to get a lot less of like the break-even middling regs that are just kind of like have a reasonable strategy, but aren't super polished at all. Like you'll find a lot of those at the 1K, but you might not find as many of those at the higher buy-ins. So I think like the middle, like you got your big winners, like the break-even-ish players, and then you got like the losing players. And I feel like in the bigger buy-ins, you lose some of the, like the middle ground players, and it becomes a little bit more of a polarizing player set. But again, I don't play like super high stakes or anything like that. And kind of just as a follow-on, for people that satellite into an event, like I get people last minute like I'm playing the main event. Like, what adjustments should I make? And this is like a rant. We normally do a webinar right before that. I'm like, don't make any. Play the game you know. like, and that goes on to like, I made the football analogy. Like, your running team, run the ball. If you play defense, play defense. Just play the game. You're not, like, if I teach you like three different things 3 days before the tournament, you're not going to know how to implement them. So.
I love it. I got to break in here for a second. We got our very first super chat as an organization, our very first super chat. Of course, it was Rob Delaney. Rob, thank you so much, man. Rob's been a Rec Poker member for years and years, OG. And I'm so pleased our man Diesel there kicking in the first ever super chat. So we will share. Thank you for that $20 donation, Rob. We'll share a portion of that with a local food bank. And you are officially the first person in the raffle for the food bank raffle a little later on in the show here. We are getting close to the end, so we're going to wrap this up in just a minute. Matt, I think we're going to have you back. This is too much fun. You're dropping too much great knowledge. Let me just ask you one more question. What are some of the very common mistakes that you see in your coaching clients that most recreational players could benefit from eliminating from their game? What are just a couple things that recs are doing too much of or too little of that could improve their ROI?
Yeah, as a very general rule, players just underinvest overall. So like you can think of poker as a game of investing. There's spots you want to overinvest, there's spots you want to underinvest. And it's a kind of a good analogy to be thinking about poker. And most of the time, like the strategies, like players just underinvest a lot. They don't value bet thin enough. When they do value bet, they don't value bet large enough. When they bluff, they tend to bluff with too small sizings, which corresponds with them not value betting with large enough sizings. They are too passive preflop. They don't raise enough preflop. They don't call enough preflop. They fold too much. Like almost everything is like players underinvesting in almost all spots in poker. And like so it. that's a big thing, especially with value hands, especially like with just a focus on value hands, like players are just underinvesting with their value hands by a lot. The other thing I would say is that, you know, I go back and forth, but just with like tournament life, I think players overvalue their tournament life. Mm. And the kind of brief concept by saying that is there's spots, obviously, where you're making adjustments based off of ICM and different like that to come to a different answer. But in terms of if you're actively choosing a play that is worth less money or less chips or less EV than another play, you are actually increasing your variance. Because so a lot of players, like, they don't want to like shove with a certain hand preflop, or they don't want to, you know, bluff with a certain hand, or they don't want to value bet with a certain hand. And when you are actively lowering your win rate, you're increasing your variance, because like the two biggest factors in terms of variance are your win rate and this field size. And so if you're lowering your win rate, you're actually increasing your variance. The opposite, you might actually be hurting the whole tournament life variance situation than the other.
And I think that's something that especially recreational players have a hard time wrapping their head around. I hear people, because we do coaching here through the Reckon Crew program. And, you know, people all the time say, well, I just called because I wanted to reduce my variance and see a flop and sort of like, you know, not lose a big pot. And can you just like sum up what should we tell these people that come up to us that actually shoving is a lower variance approach than calling? Is
yeah, it just like, that's a big,
give me like two sentences that I can give these folks when they come asking.
Yeah, the common like button raises, you have 20 big blinds with pocket deuces. Like shoving is actually lowering your variance because there's so many flops you just have to check fold, and you're just bleeding away 2-3 big blinds every single time. You're check calling to check call, like you're calling a flop, and then maybe you get a good flop and you call once, you have to fold the turn now and stuff, versus like they're actually going to fold preflop like 60-70% of the time. And then even when they call, you're still going to win the pot like a large percentage of the time. And so it's actually like lowering your variance in those types of spots by risking your 20 big blinds preflop rather than calling and slowly dwindling your stack at that point.
And one of those great things about poker is you're never drawing dead. If you get it in preflop, you've always got a chance. You've always got a chance. It's never.
Fortunately for us, there's people that take that too far.
yeah. Luckily for us, that's right. I want them at my table all the time. Oh, well, I guess that's time for the end of the official question and answer interview portion. We're going to move on to Stake Study Stack. I have to shout out Eric Jin, who came up with this fantastic segment that we've been doing for the last while. So thank you, Eric. I wish you could join us in the recording of the podcast, but you're still at work, slaving away at your day job like so many of us recreational players do. But my hat's off to you, sir. Chris Jones, lead us into Stake Study Stack, sir.
All right, Matt. This is a game we play. It's called Stake Study Stack. I'm going to give you three names. You tell me one of the players who you would like to stake in a cash game or tournament, one that you'd like to study with, and one that you'd just like to stack and take them all their chips.
Okay.
And I see that Rob in the chat was kind of thinking like me. We've got some poker coaching people to ask you about, as well as a name you mentioned in the podcast today. So my three names for you today are Lexi Gavin, Jordan Drummond, BBZ, or Jonathan Little, or those are your three names.
Okay. I'm studying with Jordan. because he doesn't play poker and hasn't played poker in like 3 years. And he still knows more than almost everyone. I am going to stake Jonathan and stack Lexi.
I love that segment. That game is so much fun. All right. And so now we're getting to the very last point of the interview. We're going to close the action with our speed round. This will be the last thing that we get to. So I just want to remind our YouTube chatters to stick around. We'll give away a prize after the interview. And Matt, before we get into this, where can folks reach you if they want to get more Matt Affleck in their life? Is it pokercoaching.com for coaching? Is there a social media platform that you enjoy more than others? What's the best way for folks to reach out?
Yeah. So, excuse me.
Yeah, take your time. And while Matt's working on that, I'll just give another plug for pokercoaching.com. They've been a big help to the Rec Poker podcast for a long time. And they're one of the sites that if you win a prize in the show later on, you could win a free month. Maybe you'll be talking to Matt before you even know it. Sorry, Matt, go ahead there.
Yeah. So I coach on Poker Coaching regularly. So almost every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Pacific, I host my webinars. For example, this Wednesday, the topic is going to be facing larger c-bets and having to make tighter, unconventional folds on the flop. So that came up from a hand last week where we played where we should actually be folding like top pair on the flop. And a lot of the students were getting that wrong and calling too much. So we made a webinar this week covering that. I think we have a topic. We're doing some multi-way pot work coming up. And so I do that every Wednesday on there. I have some quizzes on there. I make quizzes on poker coaching. So you can find me there regularly coaching. And then on poker coaching, under the tools section, there is a section for private coaching. And that's probably the easiest way to reach me. Or you can send me an email at afflickcoaching@gmail.com if you are interested in coaching. Yeah, so those are the two main ways. I'm on Twitter at McMattoPoker. I don't post very much, but I'm on Twitter a lot. I try to stay out of any Twitter drama or anything like that. So I'm not really too active on there. I might be getting more active with some content stuff, but I don't post nothing interesting content-wise on there.
All right. Well, last reminder to our YouTube folks, be like Robert Delaney and type the words food bank into the YouTube chat. We'll be drawing a winner for our prize a little later on. But first, as you can tell, we just got some sound effects this week, so we're getting pretty excited about it. It's time to close the action. Yeah. Yes, Joe, we can work on some sound effects. I'm not we're just putting it together. Okay. So closing the action, the speed round. Again, the emphasis is we got to be fast and you can say pass. All right.
Okay.
Here we go. So we're going to start with an easy one. Matt Affleck, what is your favorite poker hand?
Ace 10 suited.
Is poker a gamble game or a skill game?
Skill game.
I'm going to give that one too. What's your biggest poker pet peeve?
Oh, too many things to mention.
All right. No, that's it. We're going to move on. Is Die Hard a Christmas movie?
I don't know if I've ever seen Die Hard.
No, good answer. That's
I don't think I have.
Is Ace King a drawing hand?
No.
What player type are you?
Aggressive.
What's one thing that if you had it, you would be truly happy?
Jeez. Pass. No. I don't know. I'm happy as is.
Well, that's a good answer. Is a hot dog a sandwich?
Yes.
What about a taco? Is a taco a sandwich?
Yes.
How about a Pop-Tart? Is a Pop-Tart
no.
a sandwich?
No.
What's one thing you are afraid of?
Spiders.
Should vacations be lazy or busy?
Both.
What is your favorite mixed game?
Triple draw.
What's one player that you respect and why?
Since he won yesterday, we'll say Eric Baldwin. He's the consummate grinder.
Love it. Yellow light coming up. Do you slow down or speed up?
Speed up.
What is your favorite childhood, like family holiday meal?
Family holiday meal. I'm a Thanksgiving person. Turkey stuffing, all that.
Are you pro chop or no chop?
No chop.
Who is your poker nemesis?
It used to be Paul Volpe. It used to be Paul Volpe. If you asked him, he got me in a few high, like three or four very high equity spots, but probably Duhamel, actually.
Well, we didn't get time for Duhamel in the conversation today, but next time we're going to talk to you about that and some other fantastic strategy stuff. What's one thing you cannot live without?
What's one thing I... Poker.
Love it. All right. That's the end of the speed round. I do have one last question for you, Matt. You've had an amazing life. You're sitting on top of the world down in Las Vegas, living the dream. If someone came up and put a gun to your head and said you have to do one thing differently, what's one thing in your life that you would choose to do differently?
Gosh, I wish I would have learned personal finance better at a younger age. So I'm a big believer that personal finance needs to be taught in schools. And it's probably the one useful thing they could teach in schools that people would actually use.
Yeah, bring back civics. I'm with you, Matt. 100%. I agree. Great answer. Let me just do some quick math here. Looks like 827 points. That's pretty good, man. Not bad. Not a bad finish. You're 800 plus, which is there's a bit of a threshold there for quality of guests. I'm just saying. You want to be on the right side of the 800. So well done. All right, folks, start typing the words food bank into the chat. And I'll just tell folks, if you've got a smartphone, and I know you do, pull it out and Google food banks near me. And you'll find some organizations in your area that you can support with a few dollars from your pocket, some non-perishable food items from your pantry, or maybe a few hours of your time volunteering. Food insecurity is something that affects a lot of people around the world. Some of them might surprise you. It might be people that you know. It might be friends. It might be people in your neighborhood or community that are struggling to put food on the table or to feed a child or a loved one. And one of the best ways that you can choose to make the world a better place is by donating some food or some valuable time or money to a food bank near you. But all we can do here is kind of raise awareness and tell people to type the words food bank into the chat. And if you do, we will give someone a prize at the end of the show. Matt Affleck, we finally freaking did it, man. Thank you so much for coming on and sharing some of this fantastic poker knowledge with our friends. We're going to have you on sometime soon because I got a whole other sheet of questions here. I didn't even get like halfway through. But thank you again. Really, this was a treat.
Yeah, let me know. I'm happy to do it anytime. And yeah.
All right. Well, we'll be talking to you again soon. And good luck with everything and keep up the great work in the meantime.
Thanks, guys.
Cheers. All right, John Somsky, take us through some home game results, and then we're going to give away a fantastic prize here on the Rec Poker Podcast for free.
Well, to start, we have B-Chip Charles Allen got his first nightly victory for the year. Stewie 13 Stuart Carriage got his second nightly victory for the year. LL Tahoe got his or her first lifetime victory, a nightly victory. Killy 19341 Rich Deacons got his first daily mixed victory for the year. Claret One got his or her first international victory for the year. Now you said it. Joe got his third international victory for the year. And East Coast bidder Ben Enslow won the LPP event. He can contact info@rec.poker for his free month at Learn Pro Poker.
Well, a bunch of killers in the winner's circle this week. Those are some big Rec Poker names. Congratulations to everyone who won. And yeah, East Coast bidder, my man Ben, send that email info@rec.poker with all the free time you're going to have coming up. You should probably see if you can get some studying in. And if you're listening to this at home, I'm glad you're enjoying the show. But if you're tuning in live on YouTube, then you get to see the bottom half of John Somsky's face for the first time in like months. Looking sharp there, John. Way to bring it down. It's summer already in Minnesota is what I'm hearing, because you're getting ready to get out in the sun, beardless and looking sleek.
Well, it did get almost up to 60 degrees today, so I had to get out the weed whacker and see how things were going. And I just tripped and fell, and now my
beard is terrible. Shaved. Well, you look great. That's what matters. And you're going to be cooler once that Minnesota sun comes out. So that's what matters there. Joe, did you have something you wanted to, I saw you unmute there.
Well, I just, are we into the food bank?
Oh yeah. So let's, great, great question. So Chris, I see a bunch of people that want to win a prize this week. Why don't you run down the list and make sure we're doing it the same order.
In order, I've got Rob kicking us off with the donation one, then Woo-hoo! Jay Fleming, number two, Dean C, Eric Anderson, Stewie, Arnold Barron, Joe Rafter, K Poker Wannabe, Rob Adsum, the Life Shoequatic. I think that's it. That gets us to 10, right?
Double digits. So what are we going to do, Joe?
You got 10, so I'm not going to be able to be on the list. But what I did want to say is that in honor of, and I'm sorry, I've forgotten the name, Rob Delaney donating $20 to the food bank. I'm going to double his amount. I'm going to donate $40 on my own in his name to the food bank here. So, you know, you always see the charitable. It's like, we'll double your money. We'll triple your double. Well, Rob, your money was tripled today as a result of your generosity. So thank you so much for participating.
That's very kind of you. It's pretty fun. Way to go, Joe. Yeah. I'll tell you, when I got more involved in the poker industry, the one thing that really surprised me was just how kind and generous everybody was. And I remain the same. I haven't been disappointed since then. So some great folks that I've had the privilege to meet. And I'm so glad to be part of this wrecking crew and this awesome group of people. So, yeah, let's do some good. Let's help some people put some food in their bellies. All right, Chris.
All right, here we go. Rolling
no
away.
No wrong answers. Let's see who the winner is.
Zero is a 10. Here we go. It is
looks like
a 9.
A 9.
That's
so
gonna
that
put us to
who did we get there?
Rob Adsum.
Rob Adsum.
The captain himself.
Oh my god. Two of my favorite Robs of all time are in the YouTube chat, and one of them's here on the panel with me. I've got let me make sure I don't have any other Robs. I don't want to piss off or annoy here. But three of my favorite Robs are definitely a part of the show right now. I'm so excited for this. What a fantastic moment. I've already confused myself now. Adsum, you know what's going on. Send an email, info@rec.poker. You are already a Rec Poker Premium member, so you're going to get to choose from some of our amazing learning partners to find who you're going to get a free month of membership with, either pokercoaching.com, The Poker Forge, Learn Pro Poker, Solve for Y, Tournament Poker Edge. Oh, God, I always miss one. I'm missing at least one, but Faraz Jaka's program, Jaka Coaching, you're going to have a lot of opportunities to learn along with some great poker minds. So send that email info@rec.poker and we'll get you hooked up with your awesome prize. Big shout out to the YouTube chatters today. Awesome group, really represented themselves well. Lots of fun banter in the chat. Our very first super chat. Gang, we made it. I'm so excited for that. That's so cool. And I want to also just shout out that Marek Madness is right around the corner, starting next week on Tuesday nights at twitch.tv/recpoker. You're going to be seeing some of the best going head to head in our 16 player ladder bracket tournament, including Joe freaking Ingram. Poppy's in the mix this year, and he's going to be facing off against one of our intrepid premium members. All the fun will be happening at 9 o'clock Eastern, 8 o'clock Central, on twitch.tv/recpoker on the first two Tuesdays in March to kick it off. And then you'll see more information coming, but keep your Tuesday nights free. It's going to be a lot of fun. So thank you to all the YouTube chatters. This was really phenomenal. And I was so pleased to have such a wonderful group in here. If you're new to the show and you want to get more involved, head on over to rec.poker and sign up for a free account. We do all sorts of free stuff. It's super fun. And if you want to buy us a cup of coffee or support us in some ways that don't involve any financial outlay, you can go to rec.poker/support and find some things that either liking or subscribing or telling your friends, ways to help us out, which we really appreciate. Gang, is there anything else that we should be getting into? I know, Chris Jones, you have to run off. If you're a premium member watching live, we're about to record the deep dive seminar. So you have a little time to go join Chris Jones and the group of wizards. Just go to the Rec Poker forums and you'll see a sign up sheet for that. It starts in about 15 minutes. Otherwise, I think I will just thank the Running Aces Hotel, Racetrack, and Casino. They've got an event coming up March 13th to 17th, the Pot of Gold Tournament. That's a $360 buy-in, and you know the company is going to be incredible when you head on over there. And you can find out more about them by going to runaces.com. I got to thank Matt Affleck. What a guy. He was a fantastic guest. Of course, everyone on the Wrecking Crew here, Rob Washam, Joseph Koulas, Kim Kilroy, John Somsky, Chris Jones, the YouTube chatters, our listeners at home, we couldn't do it without you. So thanks for everyone for being a big part of Rec Culture and the Rec Culture podcast. We'll see you again next weekend.